Welcome to the City on a Hill podcast. City on a Hill is a Catholic young adult community located in the greater Kansas City area with a mission to inspire and form the young adult generation in their pursuit of sainthood. In each episode, we feature a young adult who will share their story of encountering Christ, some specific ways they are personally pursuing sainthood, and how they live on mission here in Kansas City. We are grateful you've decided to tap into our community and hope that you feel inspired on your personal pursuit of sainthood. Thanks for listening in, and here are your hosts.
Welcome back to another episode of the City on a Hill podcast. My name is Father Andrew Mattingly. I'm your host. And in this podcast, we interview Catholic young adults in Kansas City and get their stories of faith. So on today's episode, I'm happy to welcome on Seth and Tori Slayman. Welcome, you guys.
Hey. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Great to have you both. And for our listeners, if you listen carefully, you may notice throughout this episode that Seth's voice may perhaps sound familiar. That's because he is the voice behind our intro and outro for the podcast.
Yes. So yeah, it was a gift to help you out with that. I really appreciate, you letting me assist, and I'm glad that it worked out the way that it did.
Dude, it's great to have like a sort of a deep, raspy voice, somebody with something unique going on in their vocal cords.
People have told me for like the longest time that I need to get involved somehow with like my voice, like whether I do some sort of like color for sports or something that. And I've just never really taken them up on that. And so this was kind of like a weird opportunity for it to work out.
It's funny because anytime I listen to just any podcast, I listen on like at least double speed. So even like the deepest voices get like a lot higher the faster you listen. So whenever I listen to anything in like normal time, I'm like, man, he does have a deep voice. Like that is good for a podcast.
Yeah. And you guys have been married now for how long?
A little over a year.
Yeah. Okay. A year and 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
November 2020.
Okay. Awesome. And right now, I don't know when this episode will come out, but right now we're in January 2022, and you're expecting your first child.
We are. Yeah. We're almost halfway to 40 weeks. We're at like around 19 weeks now, but.
That's great. Yeah. Well, everybody listening, say a prayer for Tori and the baby.
Yeah.
And maybe by the time this episode comes out,
it'll be here.
Maybe.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Do you know yet if it's a boy or a girl?
No.
Okay.
No. We're going to wait to find out. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll have a sonogram next week when you would normally be able to find out. But
awesome.
We're going to wait.
Yeah.
Great. It'll now it's just like an alternating like it, they, them, he, she, whoever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be in June when it arrives and we're excited.
That's
it's
awesome.
It's going to be awesome.
That's great. Cool. Well, we'll just jump right in here. So I don't know which of you guys wants to start, but tell us your story of faith.
Okay. Yeah, I'll start off. I always like to start with this. I'm from Paola, Kansas, so a little bit further south of Kansas City. Mm-hmm. My parents, I would say, they raised me to go through the sacraments, but not necessarily to go to church per se. We would go, on Christmas and Easter, but really outside of that, it was very uncommon for us to attend anything Catholic related. So I pretty much did that up through confirmation. And then in high school is kind of the same thing. Occasionally we would go, but not very consistently. And when I was looking for a college, I knew I really wanted to play baseball. So really that was the only driving factor in my choice of college. But my grandfather had actually went to Benedictine when it was still high school, when it was still St. Benedict's High School. And he was the last graduating class. And my family's kind of had this tradition of going up to Atchison. And nobody else had done it. So I don't know. I've kind of been noticing that I really like this tradition thing of like continuing something. So I decided I'd go up there and visit. I was offered a baseball scholarship. Kind of just worked out really well. So I decided to take that offer. Didn't really go into it with any plans of like I knew it was Catholic, but didn't know much didn't have a plan of like pursuing that when I arrived there. And then junior year is when we kind of started talking. And for whatever reason, I'd always found like a woman with faith very attractive to me, but I wouldn't know how to explain why I felt that way. Like I've always just kind of thought that I would end up with somebody who had that. And that's when we met, and Tori was very faithful at that, you know, still is, but at that point in her life, she was definitely a leader there. And so I felt like there was somebody that I could learn from. And so over the course of a couple months, we started taking things a little more seriously. And then I finally probably came open to it, like winter of my junior year was like the point when I was asking questions, and I wanted to be like skeptical of it throughout the entire time, because I didn't want to just be like at a Catholic college and, you know, just thinking that that was going to be the only thing that I had to choose from, which, you know, looking back at it, it's just kind of funny that I had that mindset, because in reality, I don't know how well I did that. But I just tried to be skeptical. You know, we would read the Bible together, and I would go to Mass with her on occasion. And yeah, I would just say that was kind of like how it was over the course of the next 2 years, really. Like I was getting comfortable with it. I was taking it more seriously. I wouldn't say I was really like sold out for it at that point, but I was like becoming, more in tune with it. And then the day after my graduation, Tori actually broke up with me.
Ooh.
It's the part where everybody hates me.
Yeah. Sorry, Tori, I'm going to make you the
downer,
the bad girl on this one. But I was actually leaving for the Holy Land like the next day. And it kind of was like a really
I knew my timing. I knew what I was doing.
It was just a good opportunity, honestly, for me to like go there with like a different, you know, just kind of my world shaken up a little bit, getting done with school and, you know, us no longer being together. And yeah, that kind of just like set myself up for a good opportunity there. And so like coming back from that, I like knew I wanted to like try this out a little bit more, you know, get a little more involved. So I started taking, you know, prayer a little more seriously and going to Mass throughout the week, even if I, at this point, I still was like in a state of mortal sin and didn't really know what I was doing outside of that. I was kind of like, you know, I had one foot in one place and one foot in the other. And I would say that continued for like the next 6 to 8 months, but I knew that I was like moving towards something. And then luckily I know Dane, now Fulcher, then Finney, who invited me to this Bible study that was right down the road, and just met some really good people who like live the faith out well. And at that point, you know, I was still partying and drinking and, using drugs of some sort. And it was just, I just didn't know what it looked like to live it well. And like going to that Bible study, I would say, really just like showed me what it meant to be like a good, faithful Catholic, and not just be like Catholic in name only, to understand how to live the life. And I just realized through that, like, oh, I really need to change a lot about the way that I'm living. And that was during Lent, so it was kind of like a really great time for that to happen. And luckily I had, just had some great people to just kind of lean on in that moment. And that's kind of when we started talking again, roughly, was around like April or May of that year. And I would say, you know, that conversion that I had during, I would mainly tie it to this moment of the Bible study, was like what allowed us to get back together, honestly. Just knowing that I was like moving towards something that wasn't like just a relationship, like I was moving towards something that was higher than that in a way. And that's like what made it worthwhile for both of us to get back together and made sense for it, because we were just on the same page about where we wanted to go. So after getting back together, Tori had actually accepted a role out in Cincinnati. And over the course of the next 6 to 8 months, I was still moving towards that, like, what do I believe in? Kind of becoming more knowledgeable in the faith, and in just the practice of, like, daily prayer, going to Mass consistently. The following June, so nearly a year of us being back together, I would say it was pretty similar.
I think it was like exact, like I think you moved, like it was like exactly a year later.
I finally got offered a role out in Cincinnati.
It was like in the middle of COVID and everything. It was just kind of a weird time.
It was a long process.
Yeah.
So I finally moved out to Cincinnati. And I was, now looking back on Cincinnati, I'm glad we went out there. We just gave it a shot. We decided to move back earlier this year in June. It's just funny how everything's happening in June.
Yeah. It's a big month.
A year of being out there, almost look back at it as like a retreat, a chance to like get away from people who maybe were holding me back, and like a sense that I was not sure, afraid to break off a friendship for like bad reasons or things like that. Or like the friendship wasn't leading me to virtue or, you know, something like that. Kind of gave me a chance to just like really solidify what I believe in. Why this makes sense, why I believe in it, and also like just kind of like a moment where we didn't have a ton of friends, so we had to just trust that what we were doing was right.
I think you were also in a unique position then too, because I had already been out there for a year, so I had all my work friends, and I had kind of like the pre-COVID experience, and so especially for you, like you, it was harder to meet people through work and harder to, like, I when you say retreat, like, I think you had that experience in a, I think both of us, but in like a very strong way. I think you had that as sort of like a, like an escape before we came back here to Kansas City.
Definitely. So yeah, we decided to move back in February for a number of things. But I think that that time allowed us to really solidify our marriage and to understand what we believe together and where we want to go. It's kind of the things that you expect when you start your marriage. You know, you want to be on the same page as the person that you're marrying. And you want to, I'm realizing like how grateful I am for like the fact that we believe in the same things and just are so directed in the same headed in the same direction, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, we moved back in June of this year. And things have been fantastic since moving back. I mean, the community here is great. I feel like it's really allowed us to make fantastic friends here. And we already had a great base. So it was just kind of like an awesome opportunity to come back here after having a, I would say for me, like just a difficult year of not knowing who didn't have a great friend base and community there, coming back to such great friends and realizing like the goodness that is here. So I think that's kind of the gist of my conversion story, I would say.
Yeah. No, that's great. I'm just kind of curious, if you're willing to share, like, what is your family kind of think of this, all these changes that you've gone through?
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know what my family thinks.
Yeah.
I'm an only child, and my father, my grandfather was a very faithful Catholic from what I know. And, my dad went to, you know, Catholic grade school, and he's kind of like had the Latin, you know, he was born in 1948, so it was like pre-Vatican II, like he had the Latin Mass all the time. So I think he just like, I don't know how well catechized he was, like how much he understands. And then my mom was a Protestant who just kind of switched over when she got married to my dad in order that I could become Catholic. And I would say as we've moved back, I've noticed my parents, like, their heart has started to soften a little bit more because of, they see us, like, living differently and, like, you know, we're 25 years old and we're having our first child, and both of them like waited a little while. And mm-hmm. I think they just see us like choosing to live our life in a different way. And we talk about things that I would assume are not things that they weren't talking about at their, you know, mm-hmm. when they were 25 years old with their parents.
I think at times we're like very confusing and intriguing to them. Like yeah. they're not, I don't know that they're necessarily surprised. Like at this point, I think they kind of expect us to do like what they wouldn't do, or mm-hmm. and I, that almost sounds negative, and I don't mean it in a yeah. negative way at all. Like they kind of, they get the gist of what we believe, but I don't know that they understand why.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
I don't know. It's kind of like in conversion, like when you're trying to bring somebody along. Is it best to sit down and talk about these things or like live it out? And
yeah,
I don't know. It's kind of like hard because there are times when I want to talk things out with them.
Yeah.
But I'm worried that they won't. Sometimes they take it really well, and other times I'm worried that they won't take it so well. So we're just, I don't know, just trying to live it out.
Yeah.
And show them like the goodness of choosing to live your life this way mm-hmm. rather than some other way.
I think especially with us expecting a baby too, like it's been, it was really fun to tell obviously his parents and my parents, and especially because his parents are in town. Anytime we go over there, it's just like all of the, like the first preliminary questions or conversation is always about baby stuff, and, which is like awesome. Like it's, I think that's like when Seth says, yeah, they've kind of like softened a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's, there's just like joy there that none of us can provide. And so kind of the idea of looking forward to something, I think, is really in like a non like theological or philosophical like discussion sort of way. It just kind of provides that naturally. That's been really cool, I think, for both of us.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Yeah, I'm always curious about how like family or friends kind of like perceive like a conversion, you know? It's always very interesting to like just sort of.
Yeah. And I think my parents also like to put it on like the Holy Land too, you know, the Holy Land trip. Yeah. I think a lot of times they're like, oh, the Holy Land really changed Seth. And it's like, no, like that was part of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it was good that I had that experience.
Yeah.
But like that's one tiny block of the entire, you know, that's a little. Portion of the picture.
Yeah.
I would say I've noticed that about, you know, when my parents talk about, talk about my conversion or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you could take advantage of that. You'd be like, yeah, you guys should go to the Holy Land. Yeah. no, that's awesome.
That's true.
yeah. Tori, tell us a little about your story.
Yeah. I don't know that I've got, just, I mean, thinking about this, especially in the last few days, even. In preparation for this, I don't know that I've got like a past tense conversion story. I think I, and I think there are a lot of people who would say, you know, have a similar situation where I think I've been really good at following the rules for a really long time, and it's like worked out so far. So I've just continued to do it. And I honestly, within like the last 6 months, I feel like I've brought this up in conversation between like Seth and I, but I almost feel like in a way, I mean, obviously not everyone's going to have like a huge dramatic conversion of any sort. And I don't think I've ever really had anything like that. Like I was raised Catholic. So I grew up in St. Charles, Missouri, like a suburb of St. Louis, with a Catholic family and Catholic grandparents, and definitely family members like Catholic to varying degrees. So like obviously presented like difficulties or opportunities to like really think about what I believed and why I believed it. So I wouldn't say it was like a second nature. I don't question any of it. Just go through the motion sort of a thing. Like it was definitely something I always thought about pretty seriously. But I think I don't know. I almost attribute it to like maybe God has just given me this grace of like trusting and believing what people have told me and like giving it a chance and then trying it out and seeing that it's always led me to a good place, like a really reliable place. But I guess not having like a super dramatic conversion or anything, I think just throughout my years in Catholic grade school and Catholic high school and then going to Benedictine, and Benedictine definitely being like the most like intense Catholic experience of those those three like school experiences, I've just really noticed that there are like small seasons of conversion, I guess. I guess like the seasons in my life, and I think back to Benedictine of, you know, when we broke up, or any like difficult times I had with school, or I played soccer up at Benedictine. So like injuries, things like that. There are a lot of like really difficult little seasons. And I've always, it was always like way closer to be, or way easier to be close to my faith and close to God in those moments. So I think there's just been like a series of small, small conversions. And then in a lot of ways, I'm like, maybe I've got a big conversion like coming up. Like, obviously, everybody goes through difficult things in their life. So it is kind of crazy to think about like how much life we haven't lived yet. And like what difficult, or like joyful, either one, but like what difficult things are we going to go through, or am I going to go through, that will provide like greater opportunities for conversion in order to like strengthen the faith that's there, but like so small relative to what it should be. So yeah, I think Benedictine was definitely like a catalyst for me in a lot of ways, but kind of similar to how Seth was saying with the Holy Land, it built on a lot of other experiences that I'd had. So I think I had a lot of like grade school, I was like one of the few kids where I was like super into confirmation, and I thought it was really cool. And I really didn't know anything about Catholicism, but I like knew that I liked it, and I knew that it was good for me. And then throughout high school, I got like the praise and worship, life team, youth group sort of experience. And that was like also really good for me. Like I've been super grateful for that. But then moving to Benedictine, I kind of came from this place where like I didn't know how to experience adoration without praise and worship music. And then I showed up at Benedictine and I was like, wait, we're all supposed to be quiet when we're in adoration, or we're supposed to like go and pray quietly or silently, like how I don't know how that happens, like I don't know how that works. And so sort of like the development of any sort of interior life, I don't think really took place until I got to Benedictine. So in a conversion sense of like really not even like going like out or up in a dramatic way, but just going like deeper within myself, I think just like seeing that being lived out by other people at Benedictine that I really respected was like a big catalyst for me. And then like Seth said, I think for both of us, moving to Cincinnati was challenging in a lot of ways, but kind of like moving out of that little pressure cooker of Catholicism that Benedictine was. And we still, I worked at a Catholic nonprofit, so we had like a lot of Catholic friends, so we still had like that sort of community, but it was a good chance to establish myself like outside of college, and then establish ourselves as a relationship, establish our marriage. And so I think like coming from Benedictine and then again coming from Cincinnati, it's been more about like what is my vocation, and that's obviously marriage, and then moving into like motherhood, like what does it look like to be a good wife, and what does it look like to be a good mother. And so much of like I think the conversion that is going on right now for me and for both of us in different ways is like figuring out what we're supposed to be, and then like doing that no matter what, like being almost like ruthless against anything that tries to like get in the way of that. Which is like an intense word, but like I think just really protecting like our vocation, I think, is like the opportunity for conversion right now. That's what I would say.
That's great, thanks for sharing. That might, I guess that kind of leads well into the next question, which is basically just wanting to hear from you guys something that you are like currently focused on individually or together, to grow in holiness. And maybe it isn't, maybe it is tied into what you were just describing, Tori, about like, I rephrased it, of like protecting your vocation. So I don't know if you want to flesh that out a little bit. Like, what do you mean by that? What does that look like?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that, I mean, that would be like my number one answer is like figuring out obviously what our vocation is, what that looks like, and then like how to do that well. Because in so many other situations in my life and our lives, it's like, okay, well, how do I be a good student? Like, well, I get A's, or maybe B's, but like I try to get A's or like, how do I be a good soccer player? Like, well, I run a mile in under this amount of time and I try to score this many goals and get this many, you know, like there are set goals. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to being a wife or being a mom, it's like, what, it, you know, what does that look like? There aren't as tangible, the goals aren't as tangible. And so I think the last year of marriage for us has been, and even, you know, preparation for marriage obviously was a lot of this too, but just figuring out like, what does that look like? Because it is so intangible and hard mm-hmm. to measure. Mm-hmm. And how do you be a better wife one day than you were the previous day? Like, mm-hmm. what does that look like in a concrete sort of situation? So I think from my perspective, it's been a lot about vocation and a lot about, I just feel like everything gets smaller. Like the goals all get so much smaller, like rather than, oh, I want to go do a big thing. It's like, I just really need to figure out how to like pray every morning. Yeah. And then like I do it for 2 weeks and then I like really need to figure out 2 weeks later how to pray every morning. And I really need to figure out how to like not complain when I do the dishes or, you know, like little things like that. Like all of the goals have just gotten so much smaller. And then like viewing those through the lens of faith and the lens of like vocation as a path to sainthood rather than just like mm-hmm. something to occupy our time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
That's great. So you would say kind of like this focus on your vocation has led to a focus on small things.
Yes, is definitely.
That, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
not always well, but like definitely the goal, the way the goal has like narrowed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's critical. I think you're hitting on something really important, which I see sometimes in the young adult world, which is like for a lot of people's lives, like growing up, there's always some big thing kind of on the horizon. Mm-hmm. It's like graduating from high school, graduating from college, getting a job, getting married. And then once like all these are kind of knocked out and the rest of your life is sort of before you in a certain sense.
Yeah.
A lot of people can have like a sense of almost like vertigo or sort of like in their spiritual life of like, well, what's next? And mm-hmm. and unless they have some kind of like grounding or foundation for understanding that the spiritual life is mostly about just going deeper and deeper and deeper in all the small things of like daily life, then it can be sort of this sense of sort of like unhealthy restlessness or sort of like can fall into kind of an apathy or an acedia, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's great that because of sort of discovering that early on that like, okay, now there aren't really like any more, I mean, there will be big decisions obviously in your life and stuff, but like there aren't these massive like milestones anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously becoming parents is a huge one, but like, but now basically, the job is to kind of like settle in, dig in, and just try and like deepen all the small things of each day.
Yeah.
I love you said that.
Yeah, and I would say that, I don't know, that reminds me of, I can't recall where I heard this, but just like when you think martyrdom, you know, you think about the person who, you know, dies for whatever, you know, for Jesus, for the cause. And like, we're all like, well, I'd be prepared for martyrdom, you know, kind of like Peter.
Mm.
And a lot of times it's just like in the daily things. I mean, I was talking about this today because somebody asked like for a book recommendation or something like that. And I actually had said Frequent Confessions by Benedict Bauer.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said the thing that I learned from that was, I mean, it's a pretty simple concept of just going to confession every other week or once a week or, you know, just on a consistent basis, even if you're not in a state of mortal sin, because you're going to get sacramental graces from receiving absolution, whether or not, you know. And basically it's just telling you, hey, pay attention to what's going on throughout the week, similar to like a reflection at the end of the day. Pay attention to what's going on throughout the week, how you're feeling, and, you know, what kind of like makes you feel bad? Like, what's an action that you did that, like, you may feel bad about that? Now, why do you feel bad about that? And just kind of like analyzing your emotions. And I would say that's kind of the focus, you know, being intentional with everything you do.
Yeah.
Eventually just like create something within you where you start to like pay attention to all the small things, and you realize there is such a significance in each moment in building the spiritual life.
I saw a Jordan Peterson, but just like a little clip, short little clip of a Jordan Peterson video sometime in the last few days. And he was like, if you want to change your life, like every night before you go to bed, like ask yourself, like look at the things you did that day and ask yourself, like, which of those things should I have not done? And what would I do if I were to change them? And then like, how would I change them or something like that? And it's so funny because it's coming, you know, from Jordan Peterson, who has like all this like clinical psychology background and like understands the brain and the way humans work. And just listening to it, I was like, well, that's an examination of conscience. Like that's what we're, you know, encouraged to do as Catholics every day. And it is, it's like all, which is a super Jordan Peterson thing, but like all the little things. And I didn't tell you that, but I thought that was really cool too. Cause I was like, when it comes down to what makes sense, like we're all going to reach the same little habits because they're like the little simple ones.
Jordan Peterson. Yeah. He's always, always saying Catholic things.
He is always saying Catholic things.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Great. Well, yeah, maybe tell me a little bit, about how you guys are trying either together or individually to sort of live a life of mission.
Yeah. I thought the question was just interesting for us because people always ask, how are we involved? You know, how are you involved with City on a Hill? And it's funny because most of the time I'm like, I'm not really involved with City on a Hill, but I'm just like, happen to be friends with people who are involved with it. And it's kind of the same thing with like the apostolate. I don't know how I would answer that question on if there's something specific, but I would say what we have tried to like create is just a place where we can invite people over consistently and like people know that they're going to get good, grounded. I mean, something simple that we've done like this year, I guess last year, we decided to sell our TV. So like that way people don't walk in and everybody's sitting around looking directly at the focal point, which is the television. Now it's like, all right, well, we don't have a TV, so be prepared. Like we're going to talk about something. So it's just kind of creating an environment where I'd say we allow free flowing conversation. And I hope that we don't like push anything on anybody who comes over, but I would say we just like try to point.
Yeah.
It's not even like a conscious effort of us trying to point conversations in a certain way, but just like we usually go pretty deep pretty quickly.
I think it's kind of been the the obvious result of a lot of different things. Like number one, moving back. It's like, okay, we have a lot of friends we want to see again, so we're going to invite them over. And number two, like we're meeting new people and we want to invite them over. And coming out of the pandemic and COVID, like, you know, we've been able to do that for a while. But at the same time, there is something that I think makes you appreciate like conversation and community and enjoying each other's company a little bit more. And then I don't know. And not like selling our TV wasn't a dramatic thing. It was like, we're moving and I'm on a Facebook marketplace kick, so let's just like get rid of it. And I kind of like forget sometimes because we're just used to not having it. But then I my hope at least is that when people come over, whether it's for like dinner and just like stop in to drop something off or whatever it is, like I want people to know that like there's enough silence for you to like talk and like we'll listen, if that makes sense. And it's not like awkward silence. It's like we have fun when people come over, but like we're gonna like eliminate as much like unnecessary noise as possible, like so that you can be heard when you want to say something. And that's been kind of like just the natural result of a lot of different things that have happened over the last year, I think.
That's awesome. I actually really like that you said, Seth, that, you know, not necessarily involved in something like formal whether it's in City on a Hill or some other organization in terms of like mission or apostolate. Yeah. Because I think something that we're definitely trying to do with this podcast and just kind of in general in the spirit of City on a Hill is to like expand people's imagination for what like being on mission is.
Yeah.
And I think most like young adult Catholics who have made some level of like commitment to the Lord have like a general idea that like, you know, living on mission means more organic stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to run some sort of official small group or Bible study, but it does mean that I need to be a witness to like family and friends. But I think it's really helpful to provide people with like concrete kind of ideas or in a real imagination for what that could look like in daily life.
Yeah.
And even something as simple as what you guys are describing of saying like, well, we're trying to live hospitality in such a way that when people come over, there will be an environment conducive to conversation that's, you know, goes a little deeper. Mm-hmm. And a simple way to do that is that we got rid of our TV and we're just trying to be cognizant of like creating a space where people know that we'll listen carefully to them. And so just simple ways of like ordering one's life to where apostolate and mission kind of become more second nature or more natural or more sort of reflexive. I think these are all like little things that people need to hear. And in a sense, like the most important and effective apostolate is always going to be the type that's the most sort of organic, right? And unorganized in a sense. And so, yeah, I'm really glad you said that, because I think there are also a lot of people out there that will feel guilty that like, oh, I don't run something official or I'm not involved in something official. And it's like, well, that's okay as long as you're living every day with like this apostolic mindset, right? And you're like looking for those opportunities in daily life.
And whenever we went to the, just like looked over the questions ahead of time, like, okay, what are we going to, you know, we need to think about. Whenever I read that one, I was like, we need to do something. Like, we need to go volunteer. Like, we need to get involved in something, because I don't know what we would answer for this. But I think in the past we have been involved in one thing or another, and we've kind of like minimized that, not necessarily on purpose, but like that has been minimized. And even for the like 2 years after college, I ran like a blog, or I've been running like a blog, because I really enjoy writing. Like that's one way I can use my talents to help other people. And sometime in the fall, like I think around the time when we found out we were expecting, it was like I had time to do it and I was totally capable of continuing to like run this blog, and I had all these big like plans and everything for it. And that was a much more like formal, you know, organizational thing that I could do. And something about, I think, the vocation switch of like, okay, like I'm a mom now, like I need to figure out how to be a mom. Nothing about it was bad, but I kind of realized like, okay, I'm just using this as the substitute for like the old fitness tests or like the old grading scale or whatever. Like, this is a way I can like keep track. And there was just this kind of like shift for me of like, I don't need to keep track. Like, maybe I just need to figure out like how to like do all the like really little daily things to like make our home a place where people are welcome and like make sure we treat dinner a certain way. And I think in the past we have been like a little bit formal, and maybe I'm sure there'll be seasons where we do have organizations that we want to be more a part of. But right now I think that's been a little bit minimized.
And kind of speaking to that, just two more things I would hit on just pretty briefly would be like, I would say over the course of the past year, we have also tried to be very intentional about our finances and like pointing them in a direction to like where we know what we're supporting and trying to support things we care about. And I don't know. I think that that's an area where it can be easily like, especially in America, like where we do have such a like tie to our money that we've earned, I feel like it's very easy to get attached to things. And we've really tried to like free ourselves from that. Wouldn't say we've done like a perfect job, but we've, you know, come a long way in a year.
And that's been a really good learning experience for me. Cause I think you, maybe just your mindset or, I don't know, like you majored in finance and accounting. Mm-hmm. So you like, you're just more like money minded. Mm-hmm. And that's been really good for me because I think you are like naturally inclined towards like generosity financially. Because, I mean, even in your job, you're, like, used to moving money around and, like, well, this logically goes here and this logically goes there. And at first I was, like, I'm not used to, like, writing a check every week when we go to mass. Or, like, I'm not used to even, like, thinking about that. And sometime in the last couple of months, I commented to Seth. I was, like, I really don't even think about it anymore. And it's not the biggest thing we do and it's not the most important thing we do, and we like by no means do it perfectly. Like it's definitely something we're working on, but it is kind of cool to realize like, oh, I'm like emotionally invested in certain organizations because we like intentionally try to give. Yeah. Intentionally try to give to them in a way that would have been much more difficult for me to do in the past.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Getting on the new polity train.
Well, and then, yeah, that's...
Were you going to say something else? I cut you off.
Well, I was just going to say, and then the other thing real quickly, was just like small things in the workplace. It's kind of cool. There's actually this other Catholic young woman who's joined my team specifically, and like we were talking on her first day, and she was kind of like giving me some hints that I thought she like might be Catholic, but I wasn't sure. And then like at the, we all went out to lunch together and I'll do the, you know, I'll pray before my meal just as like a small little sign for somebody to know that, people are thinking about faith, I guess. And we happened to like go up to,
we like ran into her sister.
Yeah. We ran into her sister randomly and she was like, oh, you're the Catholic guy that works with Megan. And I was like, yeah, that's nice. That's me. That's funny that, you know, just something as small as that. And then, I don't know, we got this calendar from Benedictine and like the first page, because January is the March for Life. The first page, it has like this big sign of like, I am the pro-life generation. And it's just like, it's right in your face. So like, it's hard to hide, but I put it up at work. And I don't know.
You even said you were like, I like didn't put it in a super obvious spot, but I didn't hide it. Like,
right. And then this woman came up and she was like, I love that calendar. And I was like, all right, well, thank you. Nice. But it's just like little small, finding small things to do that. And it doesn't even need to be that bold, but just trying to even be purposeful about conversations in the workplace too.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah.
Amen to that. That's like those mission fields are the critical ones. That's where like only you can make a difference. Only you can reach those people. So,
and Seth, it's like so fascinating to me because I don't know if it's like something about you or what it is, but like Seth ends up in the most like random conversations that somehow go directly towards faith with like homeless people or strangers or like people at bars or coworkers or like conversations I would love to be in, but have never just like arisen. And so it's cool, especially with work, because I think he ends up in a lot of just like really, small conversations or little interactions where I'm like, I've never had a conversation like that ever. And you have one like twice a week with people who for little reasons knows that he's Catholic or he's a person of faith or whatever. So it's like cool to hear how he does that at work too.
Well, thank you.
It's like it's probably the deep voice. They're just like, makes them comfortable. They just open up.
If I lower my voice, more people that. Will talk to me about faith.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. Well, listen, guys, it's great having you on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, thanks for...
We're happy to be here.
Thank you for all that you do for not only us, but for the greater community. We're, we're really grateful for it, and we're grateful to know you so well, and just thankful to be a part of all of this.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Definitely.
My privilege, my pleasure is to sit at Chick-fil-A. No, it's great. Yeah, thanks for sharing so much about your life and your stories and how you're trying to settle into your vocation. We'll be praying for y'all with your first child. And
please do.
And
thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you all for tuning in to this episode of the City on a Hill podcast. And we hope you tune in next time. Bye-bye now.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the City on a Hill podcast.
consider subscribing so you don't miss another exciting episode, or leaving a review, which may help others find the podcast and be inspired on their pursuit of sainthood. Check out our website at kansascityonahill.org and consider joining us at one of our upcoming events. Be assured of our prayers for you and for all young adults in the Kansas City area. God bless.